I would love to take time and talk about the book of Luke. As was just noted by Jesse, that is one of the classes that I teach at Southwest. It is my favorite book in the New Testament. I have to put some restraints on myself because I want to just run right into Luke since he brought it up. We're going to turn our attention to the Old Testament, to wisdom literature, and the book of Song of Solomon as we know it. A few questions. First of all, how familiar are you with the book of Song of Solomon? I'm just curious. I'm going to ask for a show of hands if you have ever done an in-depth study of the book of Song of Solomon. Okay, we've got one up real high, a couple kind of, you know, up there. Have you ever read the book of Song of Solomon? Okay, read it. I'm going to begin really in the book of Kings. Let's open our Bibles to the book of 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 4. If I ask you to tell me something about Solomon, what would you tell me? Okay, you think about wisdom. He was the son of David. All right, what else? When you think about Solomon, anything else you think about? Okay, many wives, a lot of foreign wives. It's noted for us, especially 1 Kings 11. What else? Anything else? There's no right or wrong answers. When you hear the name Solomon, what jumps out? Very wealthy. Man of a lot of wealth. The building of the temple. Okay, Solomon's temple. Anything else? Okay, the wisdom of Solomon far exceeded that of any man.
I think of a bad father because it was his son that from then on out, the kingdom was split.
Okay, a man who has a father maybe wasn't the best. The book of Ecclesiastes, Jesse noted, he was the writer of that book. Anything else? Did you know that he was a writer of Proverbs? Okay. We think wisdom, maybe that's where our mind was when we thought about the wisdom. Did you know that he was a songwriter? When we think of Solomon, that might be the last thing on our minds, that he was a songwriter. 1 Kings chapter 4, let's begin at verse 29. 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 29. And God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding. That's what he had asked for. God said, ask for whatever. And he asked for an understanding heart to be able to rule over God's people. And so he gave him wisdom and understanding exceeding much and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelleth the wisdom of all the children of the east country. That was an area that was known for its men of wisdom. Those men who came after the birth of Christ came from the east. Okay, they were not when Nebuchadnezzar took into captivity those of Jerusalem and Judea. He took back the wisest of the men. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah became advisors, so to speak, men of wisdom. And the wisdom of Egypt, for he was wiser than all the men, than Ethan the Ezrahite, and Heman, and Chalcol, and Darda, the sons of Mahal, and his fame was in all nations round about. Wish we had time to go to 1 Kings chapter 10 and see the Queen of Sheba. Okay, she had heard of his the great fame of his wisdom, of his wealth, and she came really to test him and try him. Here's just an upstart monarch. His father was a shepherd. He's just second generation monarchy. No doubt she was of a royal lineage and came to show what royalty really was, but she was astounded. She was left speechless when she saw the greatness of Solomon. But now look at 32, and he spake 3,000 proverbs. Well, that is a demonstration of his wisdom. But look at this. And his songs were 1,005. Solomon was a songwriter. I suppose we do not think about Solomon as a songwriter. Now, with that thought in mind, let's go to the book of Song of Solomon. And the book of Song of Solomon is known by various names. We know it as the Song of Solomon because we open up our Bibles, our English Bibles, and we see the title of the book, and what is it? Song of Solomon. It's also known as the Canticles. Canticles just being a fancy word for hymn. But there's another title by which it is known, and it is Song of Songs. Now look at the first verse. The Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. How many songs did Solomon write? 1,005. And of 1,005, in the eyes of Solomon, this was the best one. This was the greatest of his songs. This was his best work. This was the Song of Songs in the eyes of Solomon. So what we're reading here of a man who was a very prolific songwriter, this is the best work that he produced. And what's it about? What would be the theme of the book? Love, marriage. You know, there are a lot of different ideas as far as the interpretation of the book. Some people see Christ in the church. I don't see Christ in the church. To me, this is just a very... Who is it that instituted ordained the institution of marriage? God did. Sometimes, jokingly, somebody may say, "Hey, you getting married?" And there's no instruction book for that. Well, God instituted marriage. Do you suppose that he would want man, humanity, men and women to know how to conduct themselves, how to develop that love, develop that relationship, how to build that relationship and strengthen that relationship, how to maintain that relationship? Do you suppose if God felt that way with regards to the marriage relationship that he would provide a means by which man would know how to do that? Here it is, right here. This is the handbook, Song of Solomon, the Song of Songs, okay? And that's what we're really going to deal with. I may refer to it as Song of Solomon's. I'll try to hold to this Song of Songs. Our study is going to be very briefly technical. I don't get too much into the technical side of the book. We are going to talk about it a little bit because this is one of the books of wisdom literature. The book of Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes. Not only that, there is a lot of poetic language that would fit into what we call the wisdom literature throughout the prophets. Understanding a little bit of the technical side of it will help us to better understand. We're only going to be able to lightly talk about this book this morning in the time allotted to us. My purpose, my goal is to try to extract some very practical applications from this book to us today, okay? That's the main goal. We're going to note some fundamentals of understanding Hebrew poetry. This is a part of Hebrew poetry. And then draw some practical lessons. All right, let's get into this. First of all, understanding the psalm or the song. Understanding the psalm. Throughout Hebrew literature, Hebrew poetry, one of the chief characteristics is referred to as parallelism. All right? Parallelism is just a fancy way of saying laying two ideas side by side. Okay? Those words may be, those two lines of thought may be synonymous. Okay? In other words, I may say to my wife, "I love you more than anything in this world. There is nothing that means more than you." Now, I've just made two different statements that could stand independent of each other, but they complement each other. They're saying the exact same. "I love you more than anything in this world. There is nothing that compares to you." Exact same thing, different words, but they emphasize, they strengthen what I'm trying to communicate. Okay? That's what we see with this idea of parallelism. We see this throughout the book of the Song of Songs. We see this really throughout the Old Testament and some of the New Testament. In Song 5 and verse 15, Song of Solomon chapter 5 and verse 15, notice this, "His countenance is as Lebanon, excellent as the cedars." Well, the cedar trees of Lebanon, first of all, picture Lebanon populated with forests of these magnificent trees and how grand it would look and how majestic it would be. And then the strength of the cedar trees, that's him in her eyes. Okay, you see this parallelism. The countenance, his appearance is as Lebanon. It's majestic. Excellent as the cedars. Okay, this is what we see throughout. And it's very emotional. It's very impassioned. That's what we're going to find out. You might make just a side note. I've got to note the book of Luke. Luke chapter 1, 46 through 45. And notice here Mary's words and her response to Elizabeth. And you'll see a lot of the, in fact, Luke chapters 1 and 2, very Hebrew in their tone, whereas 3 through 24, very Greek in their tone. But you see this parallelism there. It's very expressive, okay, as she praises God in this particular text. Different forms of parallel. Yes, sir.
Just thinking about the Greek and Hebrew language compared to the English language, they didn't have punctuation like exclamation points and all that other good stuff, so the repetitiveness would show the emphasis of the text.
Okay, Jesse making the point, in our English language we have punctuation, right? We know when to pause, we know when to stop, we know when to emphasize, we know when to question. Not necessarily the case with the Hebrew language and the Greek language. And so that repetition then emphasizes that. There's a couple of different types of parallelism that I want to mention. There's five or six different forms of parallelism that you might see. Synonymous parallelism, I think it kind of explains itself. Two particular thoughts that are stated that are very similar. Okay? Very similar. Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 2, and the Proverbs full of this type of parallelism. Thou art snared, this is Proverbs 6:2. Thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken by the words of thy mouth. Well, you really just see a change of one or two words. The point is a repetition for the point of emphasizing the truth. You ever said something and as soon as it came out of your mouth, you thought, I wish I could have that back. Okay. Sometimes we snare ourselves by the words that we say. Okay. So I'll tell you what, the book of Proverbs, it's not necessarily for the life to come as much as it is for the life now. Okay? It's practical wisdom of living now. Now that's going to carry over for us, but it's for today. Then you have what's referred to as antithetic parallelism, which is just the opposite of synonymous parallelism. Words that are opposite. So you would have the truth. And then what is error, or opposites maybe, not necessarily truth versus error, but the opposites are stated to emphasize the truth. Here's an example, Proverbs 14:34. Okay, both of these statements are true, but they're opposite of each other. Righteousness exalteth a nation. Sin is a reproach to any people. Okay, now, the emphasis is the same thing. All right, but you see they're opposite statements. And so you clearly opposing the good and the bad to emphasize a particular truth. You're going to see a lot of this imagery. Again, we're just going to scratch the surface of the Song of Songs this morning in this class period. So some of these things I'm giving you so that when you continue a study of this book, okay, you can start maybe to see some of this parallelism and some of the imagery, a lot of metaphorical language, a lot of imagery that we see in the book. Again, just briefly, some of this imagery in metaphors that play a large role in this Song of Songs. A metaphor is just two particulars that are compared to each other. The most well-known in the Old Testament, Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd." The Lord isn't a shepherd. Well, he is a shepherd in a sense, but not a shepherd watching literal sheep. But we get the idea. Our Lord is our shepherd. There's the protection. There's the guidance. There's the provisions. Okay? The most well-known, perhaps, in the New Testament, "Behold the Lamb of God." There is Jesus, who is the Lamb of God. Okay? When you think of a lamb, what comes to mind with regards to Scripture? A sacrifice. He is the sacrifice that no man could bring for himself, but that God brought. Jesus also would speak metaphorically of himself. "I am the door to the sheepfold. I am the good shepherd." You see this often throughout the book. There are metaphors of geography. metaphors of nature, animals, plants, trees. Some of them are going to seem a little bit humorous, make us scratch our heads. We have to understand what we're reading here in the song is cultures centuries before. All right, now let's just notice just a few of these. Then we're going to get into the book itself. Look at chapter 1 and verse 9. I don't know if my wife would appreciate this. I have compared thee, O my love, to a company of horses in Pharaoh's chariots. We're going to talk about that a little bit, that particular verse a little bit more. But if I told my wife, I compare you to horses, I don't know if that would go over very well. Okay? But in that culture, and we'll see how the meaning of this shortly, she understood it was a compliment. Chapter 4 and verse 1, thou hast dove's eyes within thy locks. Behind your hair, your locks of hair, your eyes. Okay? Talking about the beauty. But then look at this. Thine eyes like the fish pools in Heshbon. Well, I don't know if my wife would appreciate it if I said, your eyes remind me of fish pools. Okay? Talking about the color, the deepness, the richness of the eyes. Chapter 7 and verse, well, we just noted there chapters. Let's look at 4 and verse 1. I read the end of 7:4. Go back to 4, verse 1. Thou hast dove's eyes within thy locks. Thy hair is a flock of goats. Well, I know my wife wouldn't appreciate it if I said, man, your hair looks like a flock of goats. Now, the tone of voice might have something to do with that. The point I'm making here, the imagery, a lot of imagery, parallelism. It's very poetic. It's emphasizing. It's very emotional. It's very impassioned. Okay? This is a man and a woman engaged at the beginning, married at the end, speaking to one another. And here's what they're doing. They're stirring emotions in each other. They're developing this relationship among one another. They are reassuring each other that my love for you is true. My love for you is exclusive. And I want to be with you forever. And I want to find time that it's just you and I so I can talk to you and I can listen to you. And I can find out more about you. Now, some of the men maybe are saying right now, I've been married for years. And I've got, you know, 2 children, 3 children. I have 7 children. You know, I got it. That's what some of the men are thinking. I got this. And the wives are sitting there thinking to themselves, please help him. Okay? It's going to help all of us. In fact, I don't mean to embarrass my wife, but you know, when you read and study, you put things into action. You apply what you read and study. Isn't that right, Jared? You put it into action. Studying and preparing for this particular class, I've been trying to make a point to be more expressive, verbal to my wife, commenting on her looks. Reassuring her that she's the only one. She came to me yesterday, Jared, and she said, you've kind of upped your game since you've been studying Song of Solomon. This book, though, this song, the greatest song that Solomon ever wrote, even in his own eyes, though written centuries ago, will benefit us today. Okay? Now, with those things being said, here's the outline. There, you go to commentary after commentary after commentary, and there's various different kinds of outlines. We're going to follow the most basic, the simplest, I think the best. I'm a very simple man. Brother Denny Petrillo provided this outline, and I thought it was really the best. In chapter 1, begin with verse 1 through chapter 3, verse 5. Okay, that is courtship and dating. And we're going to draw really the majority of the points. Because a lot of the points that we're going to see in courtship and dating, you know, those things need to carry over into marriage. Now, I'll sometimes talk about my wife and say, refer to her as my girlfriend. Somebody say, I like that coat you got on, that jacket. My girlfriend got me this. Well, the person I'm talking to, if they don't know I'm married, they may think I'm dating. No, my wife. We need to be dating even after the I do's. So a lot of these things that we're going to pull out of these first 2 or 3 chapters, you know, even though it falls under courtship and dating, applicable to us today. Chapter 3, verse 6 through the first verse of chapter 5, the wedding and the honeymoon. That's what we see in that particular section. And then the final section from verse 2 of chapter 5 through the end of the book, chapter 8 and verse 14, after the honeymoon, building a lasting relationship. Now, that would be an outline for the book. I think that it is very practical and would help us. The lessons that I'm going to take come primarily from courtship and dating, some from after the honeymoon, building a relationship. How many do we have in here that are of a youthful nature? No, Aaron, I'm sorry, brother. That are of a youthful nature. Let's say under 20. Okay? It's okay if you put your hands up a little bit higher. We have a few under 20. What about, say, 20s to 30s? 20s to 30s that aren't married, that are still maybe in the... Okay. All right. So we're going to talk about some things that apply especially, particularly to you, but in as much as we should still be dating. And sometimes we take... Do we not do this, men? When we get married, we start to take some things for granted that we used to do. See, we would go above and beyond to say and do things to endure, to draw that woman to us. And then when we're married, it's like, nah, I ain't got work. Let me give you an example of that. I'll use myself. It's not going to embarrass you, I promise. It's been a few years ago. And my three sons, I don't know, Jesse, you might have been in this too. I don't think you were. But I know you weren't. My sons, because y'all were in school at the time, three boys, Curtis, Anthony, and Fred. And then another young man who was, and his wife were staying with us, and his name is Patrick. They were all on the floor doing their push-ups and doing all these exercises, and they had something on the TV. It was like one of these extreme type of workouts. And I'm sitting over here in the recliner, like, man, y'all are crazy. No way. I did something like that, I'd be in the emergency room inside of 5 minutes. And they're just getting after it. And finally, Patrick just stops and says, "What am I doing? I'm married. I don't have to do this anymore." Well, that's our mindset sometimes. We get married, I don't have to worry about it. I'm married. We take things for granted. Worst thing in the world we can do is take our mate, our wife, our husband for granted. Worst thing we can do. Because when we take them for granted, I can promise you there's somebody in the shadows ready to step in. And we can world-proof our home and our relationship and our marriage if we'll read these things and study them and make application. All right, let's look at some practical lessons from the Song of Songs. What time do I have to stop?
There'll be one bell at about 10 after and then 2 at 15
okay, after. About 10 after. We got to fly. Okay, here we go. Let's start with this thought, making yourself attractive. Now, if you're dating, if you're in that dating age, you're already working on it. You're making yourself attractive. When you're married, you say, "I don't have to do that." Yeah, we need to keep on doing that, all right? Making yourself attractive. Look at verse chapter 1 and verse 3. "Because of the savor of thy good ointments, thy name as his ointment poured forth, therefore do the virgins love thee." The women are attracted to you because of these things. Now, I want to make one point, which I believe is a very salient point here, that we never think about with regard to making ourselves attractive to others, and that is a good reputation. I tell you what, you're never going to find a good woman, a Christian woman, if you don't have a good reputation. You just hang it up. You may find all kind of women that are attracted to you, but if you don't have a good reputation, you won't find a good woman. And young ladies, if you don't have a good reputation, oh, you'll find all kind of men. Number one, they're not going to want a lasting relationship with you. And number two, you're not going to find a good man if you don't have a good reputation. This is what we see here. Notice, "Thy name is as ointment poured forth." Thy name as his ointment poured forth. We have to maintain a good reputation. When you're young, the decisions that you make, how you live, how you conduct yourself before other people, you're already building what your reputation is going to be 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road. Now, I want to make a point here with this. Just put your finger right here and let's go to the book of Proverbs. If I start talking fast, I apologize. I've got a lot I want to get through. I can tell already I'm not going to get it all. Proverbs chapter 1. And let's make a point to those who are younger those who are still at home, or maybe if you're not at home, you're still under the influence of your parents or guardians, whatever the case may be. Look at Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8. My son, and you can apply this to son or daughter, hear the instruction of thy father and forsake not the law of thy mother. Listen to what your parents are telling you, how to live your life, how to conduct yourself, language to use, tone to use when you speak, friends to surround yourself with, places to go, places to avoid. Listen to them. Listen to what they say. Why? Look at verse 9. For they, what? The instruction of the father and the law, the teaching, instruction of your mother. They shall be an ornament of grace. Anybody have anything different than ornament of grace?
Graceful ornaments in the New King James.
Okay. Great. What? Graceful ornaments? Okay. Is anybody wearing any ornaments? Yeah. Necklaces.
My smile.
Right. Your smile. Earrings, rings. Women wear, they wouldn't call them ornaments, it's called jewelry. I might refer to them as accessories. Okay? I wear a hat from time to time. It's just an accessory, goes with the outfit, you know, kind of to make me look a little bit better. Why would you wear accessories only to adorn and to make yourself look better, therefore to draw people to you? That's what the knowledge and wisdom that your parents teach you will do if you'll put it into action in your life. It will draw other people, good people, to you. Now watch this. It'll an ornament of grace under thy head and chains. There you see it. See a necklace about thy neck. Now, you're going to love this, Jesse. Look at Luke chapter 2. Okay? Luke chapter 2. And here we see this put into action by none other than our Savior. Now watch this. Luke chapter 2, let me get to it here. Luke chapter 2, and let's start at verse 51. The back story here, Joseph and Mary and their family go to Jerusalem. Jesus remains behind. He's in the temple. They find him. Now they're returning to Bethlehem. Watch this, verse 51. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth, and watch, and was subject unto them. The instruction of his father and the law of his mother. He listened to them. He subjected himself to them. And his mother kept all these sayings in her heart. Now watch this. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in what? In favor. You know what that word, Greek term is translated favor? It's pronounced something like charis. You know what that's most often translated in the New Testament? Grace. Noah found grace. Noah found favor in the eyes of God. Why? Because of the way he conducted himself. He had a good reputation. Jesus listened to his parents, and that knowledge and wisdom he gained from listening to them became an ornament and a necklace that attracted favor from man and God. I'm going to tell you what, you want to find a good man, you want to find a good woman, you make sure you have a good reputation. Okay, that's number one. Now let's get into a little bit more lighthearted things. Let's go back to Song of Solomon, and let's look again at verse 3. Because of the savor of thy good ointments. Well, that's old King James. We don't talk that way anymore. Anybody have that in the New King James? Read that first part of verse 3.
Because of the fragrance of your good ointments.
Ah, because of the fragrance of your good ointments. Because of the cologne that you wear. You know, you might never think to read the book of Song of Solomon and realize, hey, we're being taught to practice good hygiene. Okay. And we don't have a lot of young men in here, a lot of teenagers in here. But I've spent time at summer camps, and, you know, bless their heart, those teenage guys, you know, you hit camp, and the first day they're already looking out at the girls that are there, and they're, okay, here's the one I'm going to be talking to, and they know which one they want to sit next to at lunch and, you know, at mealtime and whatever. And they're out here running around, playing ball and sweating, and they get back to the cabin, and I don't have time to take a shower, so what do? They grab a can of Axe, and they just take and they soak themselves down with it, and they, all right, Mom, all right. No, you are not all right. I don't care if you bathe a skunk in Axe, it still smells like a skunk. Okay? Young men. And not only young men, what do we do sometimes when we get married? We forget about it. We just take it for granted. Don't do that. The things that we did to endure our wives to us when they were our girlfriends, we need to keep doing. Okay? We don't need to take for granted. I've been, fishing all day and probably smell like fish, but that's all right. That's all right. I get a shower tomorrow. And then we go to bed and our wife, we want to snuggle up to our wife and we smell like fish. Come on. Hygiene. We need to practice hygiene. That may sound like something that doesn't mean much to us. Put it into practice. Look at chapter 6 and verse 6. We see kind of the same thought here. Thy teeth are as flocks of sheep which go up from the washing. What's a sheep look like after it's been washed? It's white. It's clean. Now, this is Solomon talking to the Shulamite girl, to his wife at this point. Okay? His wife, she was still maintaining herself. Okay? Make yourself attractive. That's the point I'm trying to make. Make yourself attractive. Let's go back to chapter 1. Look at verse 10. Thy cheeks are comely with rows of jewels, thy neck with chains of gold. What's she doing? She's making herself attractive. Verse 12. While the king sitteth at his table, she's been brought into the banquet hall, into the chambers, we're going to see. That's the banquet hall. And she's wondering, we'll get more into this, am I making the right impression? Okay? Notice, my spikenard, my perfume, sendeth forth the smell thereof. What's she doing? She's making herself attractive. Now, let's make a little bit of application here. Ladies, men appreciate physical attractiveness. God created man, he created woman. He wired us together differently. We're just not the same. I'm going to go ahead and say it, because we're not going to get all the way to page 5 in what I've got prepared here. The difference in men, and tell me, raise your hand if you've ever heard this. The difference in men and women is like the difference in buffalo and butterflies. You ever heard that?
I'm a butterfly.
Ain't no butterfly. What's the difference in a buffalo and a butterfly? Buffalo stands out in the prairie, right? What happens when a storm comes up? What's that buffalo do? Well, strong wind comes up. Buffalo just stands there like a buffalo does. Not going to bother him. Rain starts to fall, pounding on him. Doesn't bother him a bit. He just walks around like a buffalo. He comes up on a valley that's beautiful flowers. And what does he do? He just goes walking right on through them. Just lays down in them and rolls all over them. You take a rock. Take a small pebble and go up to a buffalo and just as hard as you can, just throw it as hard as you can. What's that buffalo do? He probably won't even turn around and look at you. Doesn't bother him a bit. Now you take a butterfly. You have a light breeze blowing, what's that do to a butterfly? You let a butterfly see a beautiful flower garden, and what's a butterfly do? You take a small pebble and lay it on the wing of a butterfly, and what's that do? That is the difference between a man and a woman. Ladies, when your husband seems insensitive, he can't help it. Okay? Men, don't let that be an excuse. Learn to be sensitive to your wife. Ladies, help your husband be sensitive. Okay? There are some very distinct differences. Men have been wired together by God. They appreciate the attractiveness of a woman. Now, let me make this point, and I don't want to get too deep in the weeds on this for various reasons, one being time. Parents, you teach your daughters this. You teach your daughters that whenever a young man sees her form, it affects him. She needs to know that. She needs to present herself in a way that will not stir up lust in that man, in that young man. Okay, a young man especially, an older man struggles at times even. A young man doesn't know how to bridle those things. Okay? And you get a young man stirred up. And again, I'm not going to get into the weeds on this. We talked about the buffalo and the butterfly. Maybe you've heard this. The difference between a man and a woman when it comes to intimacy is like a crock pot in a microwave. You know, I put something in the microwave in a few seconds, man. In a crock pot, it's different. It's slow, okay? Now, the point is this. Please teach your daughters that how they present themselves to young men needs to be chaste. It needs to be Christian, okay? Because they don't really understand. Take time and teach them. Take time and teach them. Ladies, something else you need to know. When you present yourself, when you take time to make yourself attractive to your husbands, it boosts his self-confidence. Man. So you're already the most beautiful woman in his eyes. And she's taking time to do this for me? She didn't have any time for anybody else. She didn't get dressed like that for anybody else. She got up this morning. She's taking care of kids. She's not going anywhere. But I come home, and she looks like we're going out on the town. Why did she do that? For me. Okay? Sometimes we get married, ain't got to worry about it. You ought to. Because a man appreciates that. It boosts his self-confidence. And it enhances that attractiveness. It enhances that relationship. He will be in awe of you because you're doing that for him. Make yourself attractive. Okay, let's move forward. This might be the last one we get to, unfortunately. I've got about six points I wanted to make. We're on number two. Here it is. Reassurance. Reassurance. I wonder between the husband and the wife who needs reassurance the most. Well, that's going to be the lady. She needs the reassurance. Look at verse 4. Verse 4. Draw me, we will run after thee. The king hath brought me into his chambers. That's not his bedroom. That's not his bedchambers. That's a banquet hall. It's a banquet hall. Look at verse 12. While the king sitteth at his table. Okay, he's in a banquet hall. They're in a banquet hall. She's a country girl. She's not a city girl. We read of the daughters of Jerusalem. Maybe this was the city girls. What's the difference often between a city girl and a country girl? City girls often live in a society, a higher society. Okay, they have money. Oh, somebody unplugged that. They're able to pamper themselves. Their parents pamper them. Country girls, maybe raised up around a bunch of boys. Okay, might be a little bit different atmosphere. Maybe out in the country, I'm working out there with the guys. So whenever it comes time to present herself to this man, is he going to be attractive to me? I'm doing everything I can to draw his attention. Is he going to compare me to these city girls? Is my demeanor, the way I've been brought up, is he going to be embarrassed by me? Okay, now that's her mindset here. Okay, that's her mindset. She needs reassurance. Look at verse 5. I'm black, dark. I've been out in the sun working. But you other girls, I'm pretty too. Okay. But comely, O ye daughters of Jerusalem. Verse 10. Look not upon me because I'm black, because the sun hath looked upon me. My mother's children were angry with me. They made me the keeper of the vineyards. I had to get out and work because my brothers and sisters didn't. I had to do it. But look at this. But mine own vineyard, now she's talking about her body, have I not kept. I haven't been able to pamper myself. So now, how's he going to look at me? Am I going to embarrass him? She needs words of reassurance. He gives them to her. Look at verse 8. If thou know not, O thou fairest, look at that. O thou fairest among women, the New King James, or rather, the American New American Standard says, most beautiful among women. Okay? She's saying, I wonder how he sees me. This is all in the song. Well, if you don't know, oh, most beautiful among women, the most beautiful of all. And she has asked, if we go back to verse 7, which we're going to note, where do you cause your sheep to rest? Okay? Where do you go? Says, if you don't know, Go thy way forth by the footsteps of the flock and feed thy kids beside the shepherd tent. He's saying, you just come and see. We're going to come back to that. Verse 9, notice some words of reassurance. I have compared thee, O my love, to a company of horses in Pharaoh's chariots. Okay, New King James. Somebody read that in the New King James, verse 9.
I have compared you, my love, to my filly among Pharaoh's chariots.
Okay, what kind of horse do you suppose Solomon had? Best one there was. I've compared you to mine in comparison to those that Pharaoh had. You suppose Pharaoh had some good horses?
Oh, yeah.
He's got the best of the best, except for one, and that's Solomon's. You're the best of the best, is what he's saying. Okay, now we might not use that kind of language today, but we can take the principle of it. You're the best of the best. You're the fairest among women. You're the most beautiful woman in the world. You are the best among the finest. She had taken care. Look at verse 12. While the king sitteth at his table, my perfume sendeth forth the smell. She had taken special care to make herself attractive. What was Solomon saying? I have noticed. I have noticed. Men, let your wife know that you have noticed her beauty. That you appreciate that she is making herself attractive for you. Okay? Man, so much I want to get to. Let's go back to verse 7. Because I want to make a strong point right here, and this will probably bring us close to the end of the class. Look at verse 7. Tell me, O thou whom my soul loveth. This is the Shulamite girl speaking to Solomon. Notice her feelings. O thou whom my soul loveth. She needs reassurance here. Do you love me the way I love you? Am I attractive to you? Okay. Where thou feedest, that is your flocks. Where do you make them lie? Where thou makest thy flocks to rest? For why should I be as one that turneth aside by the flocks of thy companions? Well, who is this one, or who are these ones that turn aside by the flocks of the shepherds? They were veiled ladies. They were prostitutes. My soul longs for you. Does your soul long for me? Where do you go? Why should I be as one that comes seeking after you as the prostitutes seek after your companions? Let me know that I belong to you and you belong to me. And we're still just in the dating side of things here. Is really? Well, the point being made, let me finish this point. Solomon didn't say, we ought to trust me. He said, come and see. Now let me make this point. You know what I have access to on this phone right here? Men, your wife should have access to your phone. She should have passwords. And anytime she wants to check it out, you say, absolutely, just look at it. Look at my search history. Look at all of my contacts. Look at my text. Reassure yourself that you're my only one. She needs that. She needs it when they're dating, but your wife needs it still. I wish we had time to talk about these other points. Maybe sometime in the future. I appreciate your time and attention.